end whatever activities we're in and take them. Otherwise, as soon as we get a quorum, we'll move into the work session on Senate Bill 125. But for the time being, we'll just go into 2937. Well, why don't you just stay here, folks? Okay. Never mind. No, we're going to do 2947. Okay, that's you. All right. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2947. We're continuing the discussion of tax credits. I want to get to especially folks who are from out of the area or who have traveled here. Shelley Brannon. Morning. This says identify yourself for the record.
I'm Shelley Brannon. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Monday after payday, there's $684.60 in my bank account. Mortgage with the late charge is $495.83. That leaves $188.77 to pay this stack of bills that's been sitting on my kitchen table ruining my appetite. That's just how it is. I work 32 hours full-time according to Oregon labor law, a couple 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. shifts, a couple 8 a.m. to 2 or 3 p.m. shifts, and one 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. shift. That's on a Sunday. The hardest shift is working till 11 p.m. Wednesday and showing up back to work at 8 Thursday morning. That's just how it is. My son is 2.5. His father is in his life, whatever that means. To me, it means he watches the boy for 3 of my work days. The boy is divided in 2, visiting between my house and his father's apartment. I don't like it, but that's the way it is. Those other 2 work days are why I'm here today. I pay a sitter to mind my son 2 days a week. You heard my financial tale of woe in merciful brevity. You know I cannot afford to pay a sitter, don't you? My employer pays my sitter. Frankly, I'd rather not have to take advantage of this wonderful benefit. I'd rather be home with my son than out working in the world, but that isn't the way it is. People like me are barely making ends meet. Without the employer tax credit, and then I ran out of time.
What are you referring to? Is there a sign that says you only have a couple of minutes or something?
No, I ran out of time this morning writing.
Oh, okay.
Before I got here. I'm awfully sorry. I wanted to come and talk to you all. It's
okay, you're obviously
important.
Talking about the employer child care tax credit.
I am.
Okay. All right. And where are you from?
Portland.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming down today.
Well, thanks.
Would you take questions if there are any from the community?
Absolutely. I'd be glad to.
Okay. I don't see any.
Okay.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks.
Wendy Willett.
For the record, I'm Wendy Willett, the Executive Officer of the Oregon Commission for Child Care. Chair Strobeck and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today in support of keeping the employer tax credits as well as the other child care credits in the state of Oregon. The Oregon Commission for Child Care was asked by the Senate President to convene a task force during the interim to look at the issue of child care affordability. I would like to share some of those findings that are relevant to the discussion today. 59% of Oregon mothers with children younger than 6 years and 77% of women with children between the ages of 6 and 17 are in the labor force. Oregon families are struggling with how to afford quality childcare that is not only safe but promotes healthy development for children. The task force found that quality child care is difficult to find and harder still to afford. 66.9% of all Oregon families with household incomes under $25,000 report that child care is unaffordable. This is based on Oregon's benchmark that no more than 10% of household income is spent on child care. The average Oregon family in Oregon uses child care, spends $240 per month on child care, and this is under somewhere between $3,000 and $4,000 per year that is spent on child care costs. The ability to retain employment and maintain self-sufficiency is directly related to working families' ability to access safe and stable child care, as the person before me just talked about. Child care supply in Oregon is of concern. Oregon has set a benchmark of establishing 25 child care slots for every 100 children under the age of 13 years, yet in 1997 we were only at 18.73 child care slots. There continues to be a pressing need in Oregon for infant and toddler care, special needs care, extended and odd hour care of a concern throughout the state. The Employment Department projects that there will be a 17% increase in the number of children that are participating in child care between 1995 and 2015. In order to accommodate current and projected need for child care, Oregon must increase its level of supply building activities. Private partnerships and investments are going to play a critical role in building child care supply in the state of Oregon. The Dependent Care Facility Credit has encouraged businesses to play a role in building child care supply in the state. With these statistics in mind, the Child Care Financing Task Force came up with the following recommendations regarding child care. Maintain the current child and dependent care credit, expand or make refundable the working family child care credit, and maintain the employer tax credits, which I think are critical. While we invest both state and federal dollars into the child care system, through a variety of quality enhancement and subsidy programs, there continues to be a pressing need for private sector involvement in child care. Companies in Oregon, as you have heard the last couple days when they were providing testimony, have found that child care is a workplace issue that they can no longer afford to ignore, and companies in Oregon have stepped up to the plate in order to provide many different work-life benefits. But I do believe in working with companies over the years how critical it is for Oregon to give them an incentive in order to provide those work-life benefits. Thank you for your time today. I hope that you will look closely at not eliminating the dependent care tax credits for employers. Thank you. Can I answer any questions?
Okay, thank you. Ms. Willett, are there any questions? You use the tax credits in material that you distribute to employers or to others to
We do.
Make them aware of that or use that as an incentive?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Peter West.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Peter West with the Renewable Northwest Project. I want to speak today very briefly in opposition to House Bill 2947, particularly the parts that would end tax credits for alternative energy and make energy conservation payments taxable. Over the years that we've had these programs in Oregon, we've been able to save enough energy to really power the city of Eugene, about the size of a medium-sized power plant, and that's helped Oregon avoid almost 1.5 million tons of carbon dioxide, global warming gases, and over 5,000 tons of acid rain causing pollutants. Every dollar, that's on the environmental side, on the economic side, every dollar of these tax benefits has leveraged about four more dollars of private investment by Oregonians. It's been an important both environmental and economic incentive for people to do clean energy and for Oregon to invest in long-term least cost and environmentally beneficial energy. This is one of the few tax credits nationally, that promote green energy. If you look at all of the subsidies all around the country, about 60% or 58%, I should say, go to fossil fuels and nuclear. Energy efficiency and alternative energy get less than 5%. and we are the one of the few states with also low-cost power that also promote clean energy. I just want you to think, as you do this, to retain these credits. It's been important. They leverage an awful lot of economic activity and an awful lot of environmental benefit. And with that, I think I'll just stop and open myself up to questions.
Thank you, Mr. West. You're talking about alternative energy devices, residential. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, are there any questions? Is it your testimony that these energy savings would not have occurred if the tax credit didn't exist?
A substantial amount of them would not have occurred.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Representative Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Representative Jeff Cruz, District 45, and I assume you're talking on 2947?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. I was talking to Joe Rohleder down in the Assembly Committee this morning, and he told me that this was up for consideration as well as 2949, which are very similar in scope. And I think the thing I would want to impress upon the committee is the fact that we are asking a lot of Oregonians as far as trying to modify the way they do business in such friendly ways. And both of these tax credits speak to the fact that we are willing to also step up and as a state and say, if you are willing to go this extra step, we will go that step with you. As far as impact on revenue to the state, it is not that significant, but it is a very clear message, and these are both bills speak to programs that are working very well and programs that are actually very important and things that we have considered as integral parts of the Oregon plan. And so I think that to eliminate these two tax credits would be counterproductive to the efforts we are trying to make to help Oregonians come into compliance with the Oregon Salmon Recovery Plan.
Mr. Chair. Representative Cruz, could you tell us exactly which two tax credits you're referring to?
I'm sorry. I was referring to House Bill 2947, which you're not talking about, and also 2949. I was trying to kill two birds with one stone, so I could go back to work.
The confusion on our part is that 2947 has many amendments that
okay.
with a whole lot of different tax credits.
Okay, well,
which one specifically are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry. The fish screening. And of course the examples and what we're all familiar with is the big pumping stations, mostly in the Columbia, that have a fairly expensive fish screens. But there's also on smaller streams there are other types of fish screens for smaller systems that are still fairly expensive. And for a landowner to voluntarily spend $1,000 or $1,500 to protect fish from his system, you know, when you're only talking about somebody with like a 60-horse pump, that's quite an investment. And so a little bit of help from the state certainly goes a long way in making that a reality.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Steve Rasmussen?
Could we not do the same thing with a direct grant of some sort rather than a credit? There's a certain philosophy that when you want to go in and support certain programs, that you go ahead and do a direct grant rather than indirect tax credit. And then everything is lined up in ways and means instead of half the stuff being over here in revenue.
But we don't want to leave revenue with nothing to do. Mr. Chair, Representative Rasmussen, actually you could, and it's being done both ways. I mean, there are grant programs that would include fish screening. I guess what I'm saying is that the more tools we have in our tool bag, the more comprehensive a program we can put together.
Representative Senator Cruz, you know, in the discussion of the salmon plan and all the discussions that have gone on with landowners and people who control waterways, has this tax credit been part of the discussion?
To a small degree. I mean, it's not a, obviously not a major part of the Oregon plan. I would say, however, that fish screens are a significant issue, and a very significant issue, especially when we're dealing with the downstream migration of fish that can have a major impact, as well as the issues, you know, the riparian issues in the other bill I mentioned. The fish screens and riparian work are two of the things that we know we can do and have significant impact on. So those have been front line issues since 97 when we first started discussing this.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Bozema.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cruz, I noticed looking at the amounts and the breakdown between the personal income tax and the corporate income tax use of this, it seems that most of it is used on the personal income tax side. Do you happen to know, is it individual small landowners that are mostly making use of this tax credit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, yes, it is. Most farms are not corporations. Most farms are just people in business, and so yes, while there is some corporate, for example, my farm, we're a family farm, but we're a corporation, so it would be business for us. But most, we incorporated back when we thought it made sense to do so. If we were going to do that today, we probably wouldn't. Then it would be a small farm.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hey, Leonard, which bill are you here to talk about?
My bill.
Okay.
My bill.
My bill.
We'll suspend the public hearing on House Bill 2947, open a public hearing, House Bill 3323. Members, this is, Ed, why don't you describe what we have? We'll be considering the Dash 2 amendments, and Representative Leonard, you're welcome to step forward to the microphone. Let's go ahead and summarize the bill, Ed.
Mr. Chair, the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3323 would increase the corporate income and excise tax rate 1 percentage point, that is to 7.6%, and have that effective only for tax years 1999 and 2000. And in addition, it would the Dash 2 amendments would dedicate dedicate the increased revenues to the state school fund.
And the revenue impact estimated?
Estimated that the 1 percentage point increase would raise about $100 million over the 2 years it will be in effect.
Okay. This is what the governor has, one of the two revenue sources that the governor has proposed to meet the amount that he's suggesting for basic school support. Representative Leonard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. When I first saw the committee schedule that had my bill, House Bill 333, scheduled, I was elated. I thought, wow, that's great. We had a hearing on a bill to raise corporate income tax to actually mirror the personal income tax. Is a great opportunity to go in and discuss the inequities of the current tax system to working class Oregonians and the excessive benefits that corporate Oregon has in the income tax structure. I approached the chair and told him I was pleased he was having a hearing. He wryly smiled at me and said, well, we're going to gut and stuff your bill. And then I further learned that the gut and stuffing was going to be with the governor's proposal. So I've actually wrestled with how to approach this issue, and I think where I've come down is this. I find no humor in this process. I find no justice to the children of Oregon in this process. That we would actually, as a legislative body, people who take so seriously our service to the state that we run for the legislature, get elected, leave our jobs, and come down here and use this as some kind of a tool to attempt to embarrass the governor, who has his only crime being trying to find revenue to fund schools, I find disappointing, to be polite. I think we have better things to do than to alienate each other further, in my opinion, Mr. Chair. And with all due respect, what the action of this committee will be if it, in fact, gets us House Bill 3323 with the amendments proposed, will be to further alienate the governor and those of us who actually believe that there is an equitable tax structure in this state towards working class Oregonian. And as far as I'm concerned, this makes a mockery of that and insults working class people to suggest that this body, the majority in this body, would actually mock raising the income tax of corporate Oregonians who pay 6.6% versus the 9% that most of us pay. It's hard to believe on its face. More troubling is that, in fact, you would do it in a way to attempt to embarrass the governor. I think it will backfire.
Representative, I don't want to take your comments too personally, but I have no intention of embarrassing the governor. This bill is not scheduled to embarrass the governor. The governor called for exactly what is in the Dash 2 amendments, and the governor did not submit a bill. So don't take it personally that your bill was found. We looked for a bill that had a relating clause that we could do what the governor said was necessary to do. So if you're saying somehow that I scheduled this in an attempt to embarrass you, I didn't, and I resent the comment that you said I'm trying to do this to embarrass the governor when this is the governor's proposal.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would only say I don't feel like you're attempting to embarrass me. I'm actually honored that you have chosen my bill to have this discussion. What I am saying is, all things being equal, I would have voted for the amendment were to come to the floor. All I am saying is, it's real hard this week to have, with all due respect, Mr. Chair, you say that this is some earnest attempt to examine the governor's proposal. And just a week ago, as I was traveling up the North Oregon coast on Highway 101, I was listening to NPR and heard, if not you, at least some of your colleagues out in the front of the House chamber singing a chorus of a song that criticized the governor for a tax proposal. So to suggest that this week that attitude has changed, I think, is difficult for me to believe. Maybe you do, Mr. Chair, take this seriously. Some in your caucus do not.
Well, Representative Leonard, I'm not attacking you as a representative of everyone who's in your caucus, and I don't think you should do the same to me. I was not singing the song. I scheduled the bill. The governor called for this. If we're playing politics with this, the governor's playing politics by calling for this and not being serious about it. If he's serious about it, he ought to be advocating for it, defending it, sponsoring it, bringing a bill to us.
Well, I'm here with this bill, and I'm happy to sit here and defend the purpose of this bill, which actually increases the corporate tax by a lot more than the governor proposed. So if you want to have a serious debate, I'm prepared to do that right now.
Any other questions? Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Senator Farioli, are you here for 2947? Or?
No, as a matter of fact, I'm trailing Representative Leonard around the building today.
So okay.
I'm turn to watch.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, those who are on the sign-up list, Gary Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Gary Carlson with Associated Oregon Industries. It'll come as no surprise to you, I think, that I'm here on behalf of our members to oppose this bill. I think we had trouble made a little bit about what Representative Leonard said, is that inequities in the tax system and comparing an individual tax burden with a corporate tax burden. And I'd just like to, I guess, highlight for you some of the key differences in these two kinds of taxes that we have. they're very different bases. First of all, there's no deductibility of federal taxes for corporations. As you know, there is up to a $3,000 limitation, deductibility, on personal, on federal taxes paid on the personal return, and that affects a rather substantial number of taxpayers in the system. And in addition, corporate taxes, corporate profits are really taxed twice. They're taxed first at the corporate level. Of course, corporations are nothing more than individuals joining together to profitably, hopefully profitably, invest and gain a return. These are people, whether they're people directly owning stock or whether they are trust funds or retirement funds being invested on behalf of individuals and people, they are people. And the profits of corporations are taxed by the federal government 34%. In addition, the state, without deductibility of 34%, taxes that profit at 6.6%. So total of 40.6%. At that point, the corporation decides with what's left how much to give back to their shareholders in dividends. The dividends are goes directly to the holders of those stocks. And they are then taxed again at the personal level at rates up to 39.6% by the federal government and by rates up to 9% by the state government. What is left over then is retained by the corporation, retained earnings of profits, which are really the engine of the profitability and the capability and the potential for growth for that corporation are retained earnings. S corporations, sole proprietors, and the other variety of organizations for profit-making activities are not taxed at the corporate level, whether by the federal government or by the state government or by any local government. Third, our 6.6% corporate rate was described a couple of years ago by an individual who was in Portland at a major conference of the metals industry. Robert Addy, the Deloitte Touche Tempus, talked about, among other things, taxes. And he called Oregon's corporate tax rate at 6.6% marginally competitive because most states who are in the ballpark, who are active players in expansion of business activity and acquisition of new corporations or corporate expansions, are in the range of 6%. So he said we're marginal at 6.6%. And at that point, I asked him, because there was a proposal from some of our public employee unions to raise the rate to 8.6% or 9%, depending on which measure was filed. I filed five of them. What would happen if that were to pass in Oregon? He said, I can tell you, you'd not see another corporation take a second look at your state because you would be way out of sync with the other states who are competitive for new business. And even though taxes are not necessarily the driving factor in a location decision, they are seen by corporate location managers as a proxy for business climate. Those are his words, a proxy for business climate. And lastly, I'd like to leave you a copy of a summary of the actual corporate tax rates paid by corporations doing business in the city of Portland and Multnomah County who have their own additional corporate business taxes, adding up currently, including the 0.5% added for Multnomah County School District last year, of 10.75%. In addition to the current 10.75% paid by a corporation doing business inside the city limits of the city of Portland, within the boundaries of the TriMet operating area, which is much broader, as you know, than the city of Portland, businesses in that area pay for the majority of the cost of operating the TriMet system. Tax rate against payroll is almost 0.62% of payroll. Now, I don't know how many of you do business and pay these business taxes in the city of Portland or in Multnomah County or in the TriMet operating area, but I talk to people all the time who do, and these are seen as very burdensome, heavy taxes that they must pay for the privilege of doing business in a major metropolitan area. Mr. Chairman, I think that the proposal brought by the governor, certainly the proposal that is the subject of the bill that is being used to discuss the governor's proposal, is ill thought out, is a band-aid approach, perhaps, to a perceived problem. And I know you've all had these discussions among yourselves and in your caucuses about what is the need, what is the appropriate level of the state budget. But frankly, in our opinion, this measure is not needed, is not welcomed, and it would be bad for the state of Oregon. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Any questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Jay Merkin.
Mr. Carlson, Associated Oregon Industries has said that promoting excellent K-12 schools is an important priority for them. What does AOI bring to the discussion to assist them in getting us to that goal?
Mr. Chair, we've brought two pieces of legislation this session, which we're working very hard to see pass. One is the charter school bill, which, as you know, has passed both the Senate and the House, not in as strong a form of which we would prefer to see. But nevertheless, I think that if the House bill were to pass, were to be agreed to by the Senate, would be a significant step forward for the state of Oregon in finding ways to create environments in our K-12 public school systems to enhance performance without adding costs. And I think that we can build upon the House bill if it will pass and become law and be signed by the governor. We can enhance that in the future as we gain experience with it, as many other states have gained experience with their charter school laws. And so we're very pleased to see that legislation move forward. We supported that bill last session strongly, as you know, it fell by one vote. We've brought another bill which has a 10-year, highly successful experience in the state of Minnesota. I think it's rather interesting in that my home state, state of my birth, Minnesota, seen by many as to be the bastion of liberalism among states, was the first state to put forward charter school legislation. It was also the first state to adopt what they call the post-secondary enrollment options, which we are dubbing the Student Bill of Rights in Senate Bill 428, which is introduced this session and is currently in the Senate Education Committee, which gives power to parents and students to decide where they can get the best education for the dollars that the public is paying to those students, to the parents of the students, to prepare that student for a productive future. And simply allows the student, if the student has passed the SIM, or is an 11th grader or a 12th grader, to decide that they want to take their educational opportunities in someplace other than the K-12 high school system, either in part or in whole. Community college, University of Oregon, Oregon State University, private universities, trade schools, whatever their choice is, for their well-being, for their best educational opportunities for their future. These are the kinds of things that I think we need to think about as a state to improve the quality of education without increasing the cost of education. those are the kind of things we think we need to be working on.
Mr. Chair.
Questions?
To clarify your response, you're making no effort to bring any new resources into the public school system in Oregon?
Mr. Chair and Representative Merkley, our broad view of the amount of money available to the state is that there is enough money to support K-12 education. It is a matter of how we choose to allocate an additional $1.2 billion, roughly 12 or 13% increase over the last 2 year biennial budget. I think there are sufficient resources to balance that budget. I think that is not our responsibility, our job, to decide how to allocate those resources. I think that is all of yours in the broad sense, certainly those in Ways and Means Committee, as an individual responsibility, this legislative session, but certainly all of your responsibility as 90 representatives of people to decide how to allocate those resources.
Mr. Carlson, we could obviously get into a lengthy debate, and that's not the topic this morning, about corporate taxes and what's happened over time to the share of taxes paid by business in Oregon, although I think you would agree that there has been some shift since Measure 5 and Measure 47, just in where we're ranking nationally. I guess my question goes more to when you're looking at the climate for business to locate or be detained here, would you say it's the case that businesses, in addition to the tax system, are also looking at infrastructure, at an educated workforce, at availability of higher education that's affordable, a lot of other factors?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, I certainly agree that they do look at those factors, and it certainly depends a great deal on what kind of business, perhaps, if you're in, if you're in the high-tech industry. They need a strong education system, particularly higher education, but as you know, certainly a higher education system is highly dependent upon the education levels, the capabilities of the students that come into their system as freshmen. And that is a universally recognized concern. The higher ed system in the state of Oregon is the readiness, if you want to use the first grade analogy, the readiness to learn, the capability to do freshman level college work is a problem, not only in this state and not probably all our states. But it is a key issue, certainly for education is a key issue for those kinds of industries. Heavy industries that perhaps is a less of a direct concern to them, but they certainly have a concern overall for the employees that they hire and the opportunities for their children to advance themselves.
Any other questions?
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Can that's it.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Tim Nesbitt, Executive Director of Oregon State Council of Service Employees, SEIU. Here to speak in favor of House Bill 3323 in its original form. And just by way of some comments and some facts in support of the bill, we are one of only 11 states that tax corporate profits at a lower rate than personal income. We are one of only 11 states that tax the profits of C corporations, usually our largest, most profitable corporations, at a lower rate than the smaller S-corps, sole proprietorships, and partnerships. We have an inequity in our tax system. We're also one of even a smaller number of states which have experienced a massive tax shift in terms of tax burden from business taxpayers to individuals. And that's been because of the property tax cutting that's been going on in the 1990s and the increased reliance on income taxes. Property taxes have been the source of business contributions to our schools and our local public programs. We've been cutting that source of taxes and relying more on income taxes, which is paid 83% by individuals. And that helps explain why individuals in Oregon are perceiving that they're paying more but getting less from government. My daughter started school in Portland in 1990, the year we passed Measure 5. Ever since then, I think I've seen one new textbook. since then, and she's brought them. All of our other textbooks predate passage of Measure 5. Our classrooms have gotten larger and larger every year since, and my property tax bill as a homeowner has actually gone up every year under Measure 5 and Measure 47 and 50. It's that experience on the personal taxpayer side, the individual taxpayer side, which I think has been creating the contentious tax politics we've had in Oregon and creating the problems we have now with school funding. By my calculation, in 1990 when Measure 5 passed, 43% of our schools, the operating costs for our schools, came from business taxpayers. Now that's down to 27%. And it's not the individual taxpayers of that much, actually. It's the corporations as the largest beneficiaries of our tax system, paying a lower tax rate on the profits when we pay on our wages. The solution simply is to equalize our income tax rates, as most states now do, imposing at least the same tax rate on corporate profits that we impose on personal incomes. The idea, in all polling I've seen, enjoys tremendous support, 2-to-1 or 3-to-1 support in every poll I've seen that we've done over the last 2 years on this. And it even was the most popular proposal at Bill Sizemore's so-called Conference on Real Tax Reform in October of 1997. I presented that proposal there in a revenue-neutral fashion, which would involve raising the corporate rates from 6.6% to bracketed 5, 7, and 8.7%, and lowering the personal rate at the top end from 9 to 8.7%. We presented that proposal at Mr. Sizemore's tax conference. It was a top vote getter. It was the only proposal that passed muster as both making the tax system more fair and likely to pass with the voters. This is a serious proposal, and it's probably, I think, the most viable single item on the tax reform agenda for raising revenue and making our tax system more fair. There are other ways to go about it. We don't have to equalize at 5, 7, and 9. Some amendments I think have been drafted and will be ready to go with dash 3s and dash 4s if you want to consider them that would proceed with this proposal as one that doesn't necessarily take us to 5, 7, 9%, perhaps 5, 7, and 8.85%, which would be some tax relief for individual taxpayers and more money for our schools. Or we could also structure it so that we can go to 5, 7, and 9% for both corporate and personal income taxpayers and raise the personal exemption to provide additional tax relief for individual taxpayers. Just to respond to a few of the points Mr. Carlson made in talking about the differences between corporate tax and personal income taxes. You have to remember that corporate income taxes are paid on the bottom line after all expenses of doing business are deducted, including the payment of salaries and benefits to staff and just about all the costs of operation. For a personal income taxpayer, there are a few things like your home mortgage that you can deduct the cost of, but for the most part, we're paying on the gross, whereas on a corporate income tax system, the tax is being paid on the bottom line net profit. That's an important distinction. It's also the case that corporations can deduct their state taxes from their federal income taxes. And so when we're talking about an increase of 30 or 35%, the net effect of that is really only 2/3 of that amount, with the additional third being shifted in the form of lower federal taxes shifted to the feds. S-corps are taxed at the federal level. They're taxed as income flows to the shareholders of those corporations. And finally, I want to point out that we would not be way out of sync with other states if you adopted the proposal at 8.85%. There are 14 other states which have corporate income tax rates at 8.85% or higher. And by the way, there are 25 other states which have corporate income tax rates of 7.6% or higher, which I think is the proposal in the Dash 1 Amendment. We urge serious consideration for this proposal. We think it's the best option available to you to both make our tax system more fair and raise revenue much needed for our schools. We would urge you to support this bill both in committee and on the floor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nesbitt. Representative West. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Nesbitt, in view of the fact that in one particular situation, Multnomah County, City of Portland, both charge corporate income taxes. Would you support an amendment to House Bill 3323 that would preempt counties and cities from levying income taxes on corporations if the basic intention of House Bill 3323, namely to make corporate and income, personal income tax rates identical, continue to stay in the bill.
Mr. Chair and Representative Witt, no, I would not. I do not believe in preempting local control on issues like this.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
So in other words, you think it's good public policy to tax corporations at the same rate as individuals, but still have corporations subject to local income taxes at the county and the city level?
Representative Witt, if that's the choice of the local jurisdiction, that's their policy decision. I know that decision was made. I don't know when that tax first came into effect, but I'm well aware of when the voters approved a surcharge on that tax last year in order to help the Portland schools. I voted for that. I supported that at the time. And I did so because of the context of overall taxation in Multnomah County and support for the Portland schools.
Mr. Chairman, one follow.
Okay.
So in other words, you believe that it would be appropriate to raise the state corporate income tax, even though corporations in Multnomah County and the city of Portland are currently paying a rate of 10.75%.
Representative Witt, we're talking here about state policy, state decisions on state tax, and I'm urging your support for equalizing our state tax system, our state income tax system, by equalizing the rates for corporations and personal income taxpayers. I think we can have separate discussions and kind of separate decision makers about what policy should be at the local level, and I think there we'll hear discussions about what the experience has been jurisdiction by jurisdiction with Measures 5 and Measure 50, and what the needs are in particular school districts, and I think that's appropriate to be considered county by county, school district by school district, city by city.
Let me point out to members that the primary reason for scheduling this bill is to consider the governor's proposal for schools, so the content of the original bill is not really relevant to our discussions today, except in just the broad framework of tax policy in general. Representative Shetterly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tim, we have a bill that we're also considering to do a tax incident study. I think the point of that being that tax increases in many cases flow through and are not necessarily borne by, in this case we're talking corporations. I guess it's seductive to talk about a corporate tax increase because that's one of those taxes that sounds like somebody else pays, which is always the best kind of tax. But without a tax incident study, we really know who pays the tax and what's the impact then more broadly on the corporate community in Oregon, but on the individual taxpayers, and should we be more forthright about it and just raise the personal income tax? I mean, if that, or do we know enough? And is that the point then of the tax incident study that we don't know who ultimately bears the burden of this if we pass the corporate tax increase?
I think that's a good argument for the tax incident study, which you're considering. I mean, all we know is that taxes are passed on to whom, by how much, and where. Are questions that can be answered with greater specificity in such a report. We do know, for instance, that corporate income taxes are also passed on out-of-state, to out-of-state shareholders, and out-of-state consumers. And if we look at other states and the reports they've done on this, we can expect that, I think, 30-40% or more of the corporate income tax increase in Oregon would be passed on to out-of-state taxpayers. That's a guess, but it's based on other reports I've seen. And I think that warrants consideration because I think in Oregon our tax system needs more the burden in state and exports less than other states.
Thank you, Mr. Nisbet.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Can I ask one last question?
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Nisbet, if the governor's corporate tax increase was enacted, the dividends that after tax, which are paid to shareholders of these C corporations, are also subject to tax up to 9%. State of Oregon tax. Does that double taxation concern you?
Representative, there's all kinds of double taxation. I pay a tax on my paycheck, and then I go out when I fill my car with gas, I pay a gas tax. You can always point to instances of double or even triple taxation in our tax system. We make choices about where to tax, what kinds of activity, and by how much. And what we're talking about now is the rate of taxation that our state, as opposed to other states, imposes on corporate profits, as opposed to the rate of taxation we impose on personal incomes and wages.
Thank you. Jerry Scott.
Good morning, Chair. Come back. I'm Jerry Scott,
Salem Vice Chair of City Watch. I was not thinking I had to pay any attention to this bill because the governor was going to be backing it, and then I find he's not going to be down here testifying, but I've heard some nice mention of doing so today. So, what strikes my mind, of course, when they address corporate income taxes is, well, the Supreme Court has declared corporations have all the rights as people. So why shouldn't they be taxed the same as people? Why give them tax breaks over us? The gentleman says, well, business won't come to the state. Well, for every three jobs created in the state, two new people move into the state. That means that they create more demand on state services and is the reason why the state has so much trouble balancing their budget every 2 years. It takes the taxes on an income of $42,000 to pay the state services that they give to each citizen, and most jobs coming in the state do not pay $42,000. The idea of double taxation is a little puzzling to me because the Supreme Court says they're people. Therefore, they're taxed as people. Their stockholders are taxed as people. That's not double taxation any more than taxing any other citizen is. Every dollar that goes through our economic system is taxed more than once. What's the difference?
Thank you, Mr. Scott. Any questions? Thanks. Is anyone else here to speak on House Bill 3323 or the -2 amendment? Seeing no one, close the public hearing on House Bill 3323 and open a work session. And the chair moves the -2 amendments to House Bill 3323. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, could you please go over the House leadership budget in the context of which this is being discussed?
Representative Merkley, the issue before us today is the proposal to raise corporate income taxes 1% compared to 2 years. You'll see in rate is in Section 1. The effective date going back to January 1 is in Section 2. The duration is Section 4. Section 5 talks about any penalties that Secretary did. The section has to do with late payments or something.
Yeah, that's correct. It states that corporations wouldn't be subject to penalty for late tax payments because of the shift.
Because of the retroactive nature of the bill. And Section 6 dedicates those funds raised, approximately $100 million, to the state school fund. And this is in an effort to comply with the governor's request for a $4.9 billion amount to go through the distribution formula to local school districts. This is one of the two proposals that he made for achieving that. So that's what we're considering today. That's the bill that's before us.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I don't believe you answered my question in regard to the budget, which is the framework for this proposal.
Right. I'm not going to answer your question. The question before us today is this particular bill and its dedication to schools.
Okay. I'll just note and relate to that I think it's extremely important to have a budget before considering that where the tax increase fits into it. And that, to my knowledge, we don't yet have a budget from the House leadership, and therefore this discussion is premature.
Well, okay. Any other comments?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to also know whether there's been any effort by the leadership to engage in a bipartisan discussion to work out a way to tackle school funding or not.
Well, Representative, that comment is not germane to the content of this amendment. So.
Well, Mr. Chair,
yeah.
Is that a no?
No, I'm not answering the question. I'm talking about this content of
the amendment. I'll note that I think it's extremely germane before running out a proposal of this type to have a dedication to serious discussion about how we tackle the problem in this state, and so that without that in place, I do also find this proposal premature.
Well, we have discussions in this building and in our districts and on the telephone and through email daily about the school funding issue, and I really regret that it's gotten to be so
polarized and so politicized in this process. I think if we're talking about somebody who's politicized the process, I think the blame starts at the governor's office. If this proposal is not to be taken seriously, I don't know why he's out there proposing it. I don't know why you all took a week ago Friday off to go talk to schools and say we had to have it if you're not going to be serious about moving it.
Mr. Chair, if I might clarify, a week ago Friday, the Democrats in the school and had the privilege to go and really see what schools were like in our rural area. We weren't stumping for a particular proposal. We were doing the research necessary to provide the framework. In the same sense, the discussion of a budget and discussion among leadership is the framework necessary to pursue such a proposal as this.
Yeah, that's not the nature of the quotes that I read in the press. Any further discussion on the dash two?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rasmussen.
No one votes for a tax increase just because they want to pay more. When voters approve an increase in their taxes, they do so because it's dedicated to a specific program or solution that they desire. As near as I can tell, in discussions publicly and privately, there appears not to be any solution or a budget that is attached to this particular proposal. So we can only conclude that this is another exercise in political theater rather than an honest commitment to struggle together for a solution. Therefore, I am refusing to support these amendments at this time. I must tell you that as a mother and as a member of this institution, I mourn yet another missed opportunity for an honest and open discussion of how we can build a state that has safe communities, strong schools, healthy parks, and compassionate care for its senior and disabled citizens. I want, Mr. Chair, members of this committee, leadership, and all who are listening, I want hope that you can remember that this was only a proposal, one particular solution. The governor himself has said it's not the only proposal, the only salvation. And I'm afraid that we have missed the whole point so far by spending so much money and energy rejecting this one proposal rather than trying to find a true solution. Mr. Chair, I'm asking you, please do not move this bill today. Open your doors. Invite us in. Invite all of Oregon to sit down at the table with you so that we may together find the solutions for the programs we say we desire. Mr. Chair, the governor awaits the invitation. We await. Oregon awaits.
The discussion on the amendments?
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, what?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that to consider this tax increase at this time is most appropriate. Before you can have a firm budget, you need to know what dollars are available to you. And I would point out that the revenues available to this legislature are 14 to 15% greater than the last biennium. There's an additional $1.2 billion. Some people believe, including the governor, that that's not sufficient, and thus the governor has proposed a tax increase. Well, I think it's important we deal with that proposal now so that we can finally make a determination as to what are the resources available to us to construct a budget to meet the needs of K-12 and higher education and fighting crime and health care and so forth. So I think it's most appropriate that we consider this at this time, and I appreciate you bringing forth at this time.
Okay, Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess there's been a lot of talk in the last couple of weeks about theater. It surprises me that when one side portrays theater, they seem to call it courage, and when another side takes it on, it gets described, I guess, as theater. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to vote no on this issue, I was going to vote no on it when the governor proposed it on the very first day. But I believe, as Representative Witt has pointed out, that the issue in this building is to determine how we best spend the $1.2 billion we have available to us in brand new revenue. And I think that it's appropriate that we had this discussion. I think any time a governor offers a proposal like this, we owe him the courtesy of having the discussion. I was disappointed today to not see he nor any representative from his office here to discuss this situation, and I was willing, quite frankly, to listen, although I had already determined for myself that I believe this is the wrong direction for Oregon to go. I appreciate, Mr. Chairman, you at least opening up the possibility for that discussion to take place.
Okay, further discussion. Representative Welsh.
I find it real interesting that, you know, there's always those that are so eager to propose more taxing strategies here, and that we do not have enough money in this particular budget or any other budget. In the last two terms, I've served the same group, it seems like, want more money, and then when you have, I think, genuinely proposed this, and you know how nervous it makes me when we this came up. But I think it's appropriate, and why aren't those same people here? And I appreciate Tim Nesbitt and others that have come up here and said, this does make sense. They certainly have the courage to come forward for this committee and discuss it and say why. You know exactly where they are. I don't agree with them, but I sure do appreciate and respect their courage to come forward. I think others that it, have chosen, I think the press and the media to express are just absolutely bomb throwers. They can easily propose something, but they have not seriously considered within this process where I think they have the responsibility to do that, and I think they have really shown their true colors by not being here. And that certainly disappoints me by all means. And thank you for bringing this forward. I think it's appropriate, but it makes me extremely nervous, and I certainly can't vote for this.
Okay. Now, the motion before us is to adopt the dash two amendments. Representative Merklin, did you still have a comment there?
I did.
Pardon me?
I put my hand.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I heard Representative Merklin. I didn't see your hand. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief because much of what I wanted to say has been said by other people, but I just want to express in terms of the dash two amendments a concern about how this is fitting into our long-term discussion that we've had of many months, because it's clear it's very difficult to change the tax system. It's very difficult to do away with tax expenditures, and I think we've seen that for the last couple of hearings. We have yet really to come up with one that doesn't have plenty of people telling us it's just crucial to the future of Oregon. And my concern about the dash twos and why I'll be voting no is that I don't think it moves us forward in a discussion, a responsible one, about changing the tax system in a way that Oregonians can live with. I think if we can't do this in a bipartisan way, and it's difficult to do given it takes 3/5 to raise revenue in this building, I think the public may see this, whether without impugning anyone's motives here, the public may see this as not a serious process of finding a permanent solution. And the last thing I would say is that's really ultimately why I'm here, because that's what I hear repeatedly from people who show up in my office, is that they want a permanent, long-term solution, not a Band-Aid. And ultimately, I don't think that's going to happen very easily. I don't think it will happen through trotting out votes that don't stand much chance of success. And I think we may damage our narrow ability to finally agree on something or have a majority of public support for something if we do make efforts that are less than serious. So that's why I feel compelled to vote no.
Okay. Mr. Shanky, let me just point out that this is a proposal that the governor advanced, and he said he was going to try to run an initiative to take a more comprehensive, serious look at the tax proposal. And this is a short-term, temporary tax increase. Representative Merkley?
Mr. Chair, the challenge we have in this building is somewhere in the nature of a $300 million budget gap, depending on where one starts and one ends. And there are several ways to tackle that. One can create cuts from other budgets in order to fund schools. One can find additional resources elsewhere. One can turn to local communities and propose a local option. One can eliminate tax expenditures, tax credits that increase the revenues available for schools. Or we can simply say these resources are unneeded. It is absolutely essential that the leadership of our two parties sits down and wrestles in a serious way with this set of options. This discussion has not occurred. No foundation has been made for considering which of these instruments we can bring bear in a balanced way to address the problems. I'm very concerned that this was proposed and brought forward as a political stunt. The children, the school children of Oregon, at this point, deserve more than commercials about baloney on the airwaves and in our newspapers. They deserve more than running forward votes designed to embarrass and polarize. And I vote no today against these political stunts, and I will be available, as my colleagues will be, for a very serious debate when we get to the point in the session that we're ready for that. And I think I, for one, am ready for that discussion.
Chair. Thank you. Does everybody else seem to be speaking their votes? Well, I will mind. I guess my opposition to the dash twos and to the bill generally is maybe largely pragmatic. Representative Rosenbaum mentioned that it takes three-fifths, and we know that there are not three-fifths in the way of votes on the floor to pass this bill. So my point is, I think, why prolong the discussion about an issue that is dead before it hits the floor. Hope that if we kill this thing today, that we can energize the governor's office to get serious with leadership as well, to get on with the business of getting the budget set. And if there is a case to be made in that context, and I do emphasize context, for a tax increase, then let the governor's office persuade. I'm mindful of last session. We have an example where when the circumstances were presented and the need was there and it was felt, business in Oregon stepped up and said, we'll fund, we'll help. The salmon plant, the timber industry did that. Didn't fare too well for its efforts this session, but they did that last session. And I guess my point is that I think we are early in this discussion. If the governor has a case to be made for a tax increase and the business needs to step up and do that, then that case needs to be made before we impose that tax. Again, I'm skeptical that that's going to happen, but the discussion really hasn't taken place in earnest, and I think the sooner we knock this thing down, and the faster we can get everybody back at the table and talking and come to some real budget decisions.
Okay. Just Mr. Haywood.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry to prolong this, but a couple things were said that I really believe need a response. Number one, there is no $300 million budget gap. We have $1.2 billion more than we had last biennium. For some people, there is always a budget gap because there's no end for the need for taxpayer dollars. I cannot accept the claim that we have a budget gap. I think we have plenty of dollars if we want to use them responsibly. And finally, the words political stunt, I think were an unfortunate choice of words. This was the governor's proposal. If there's any political stunt here, it was on the part of the governor to propose a solution for which he had no reason to believe there was support sufficient to pass it. If we want to discuss K-12 education funding, we should be talking about that realistically, not by proposing solutions that don't have a chance, never had a chance from day one. It's not helping the solution. And I think that to make that clear today through this process is important so that we can get about the serious business of determining how we're going to make decisions with the dollars that we do have available.
Thank you. Any further discussion? I just want to actually echo a couple of your comments, Representative. I think anybody who characterizes this amendment as insincere and a political stunt has to look to the maker of the motion, the governor, and apply that exact same characterization, because this is exactly his proposal.
Mr. Chair, may I respond to that, please?
Okay.
Well, as one who used those words, I do not carry those words to the governor. I think that bringing forward a proposal in an effort to stimulate serious discussion is absolutely the role that the governor should play. It is then following that we should be engaging in serious discussion. That is our responsibility now, not to engage in this. And I would note that we haven't had serious discussion. I don't believe the chair has spoken with a member of this committee about pushing forward with this or expressed his support for it. or discussed how this trades off against many other options that we have before us. A member of the party across the aisle has presented a number of budget cuts designed and intended to try to close the gap in education spending. We have not weighed and wrestled with those as opposed to tax increases. That is the sort of discussion we need to be having, and that is the responsibility of this body. We are the deliberating body, not the executive body.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Representative Rasmussen.
The governor is not the maker of this motion, sir. The maker of this motion is you. You have that power inside this process, and on this day, you are the one who has made this motion and scheduled this bill for a hearing on this day. We can choose not to do this. We can choose to go beyond this particular event, set this vote aside, and go straight to the negotiating table.
Okay. Any further discussion on the
amendments? I'm the only person who has a question.
Representative before.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to get on the record to say that I will be voting no on this, the amendments and on the bill. However, I think that despite the tone of this conversation, that we are at least starting off to debate school funding, and I think while we can say whatever remarks we want about whichever party, the truth is at least the governor's proposal and this bill being brought forward today are starting the discussion, which needs to continue. And I just hope that this is the beginning of a bipartisan effort to find adequate funding, whatever that might be, for schools. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad you spoke last, because you at least found a little silver lining on somewhere. Okay, the motion is to adopt the day's two amendments. Barbara, would you please call the roll?
Representative Murphy? No. Representative Rosenbaum? No. Representative Sherry? No. Representative Wells? No. Representative Williams? No. Representative Witt? No.
Vice Chair Atkinson? With extreme reluctance, no. Chair Strobeck? Aye.
The motion to adopt the day's two amendments fails. Public, the work session is closed on House Bill 3323. Let me ask the members, have you had a chance to think about, I know this is kind of a sudden change of gears, but about Senate Bill 125, and I ask that because we do have some other folks who have come from out of town, it looks like, to speak on the tax credits bill. If possible, I would like to move forward with Senate Bill 125 and with the amendments that we have previously discussed, and be able to at least return to get some more public testimony on 2947 before we have to go to the floor. Everybody had a chance to look at that. Comfortable with that, Representative West?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I have, and I support the most recent amendments to that bill.
Okay. Well, let's move 125 then, Lista. We'll open work session on Senate Bill 125. You may recall this was the issue regarding Representative Rasmussen's constituent, Ms. Atterbury, and the problem that she got into. Can you tell us what the effect of the Dash 10 amendments are?
Okay. Chairman Strobeck and members of the committee, the Senate Bill 125-A10, Section 1 and 2 are just changing the time that the additional taxes from the property tax roll corrections can be placed on the general tax roll. And so these additional taxes are placed on the following year's tax roll. And then the additional taxes that are added shall be considered delinquent at the same time as those other property taxes imposed in that year become delinquent. So this applies to both personal and real property and both clerical and omitted property tax error corrections. And that's what Sections 1 and 2 are doing. And Section 3 states that Sections 1 and 2 begin on or after the effective date of the 1999 Act. And then Section 4 is a section that is designed narrowly focused to target the one taxpayer in Multnomah County. So for that one particular taxpayer, if the additional taxes for the taxable corrections have not been paid, then these are the things that are going to change the account. So first of all, the foreclosure proceedings are canceled. The additional taxes shall be added to the tax roll for the year 2000-2001. All delinquent interest accrued is waived. And then the additional taxes added to the assessment and tax roll shall constitute a lien on the property and can be deferred at the option of that property owner. So those additional taxes will be deferred until the property is sold, and the deferred taxes shall not be charged interest. And then finally, Section 5 was integrating in the Dash A8 amendment, which corrects an error in 311.812 statutes pertaining to the interest rate that is charged on refunds. So under current law, the interest on refunds is 16%, which is the same as the delinquent taxes, but this was an error, and it's now correcting that error and changing the interest rate to 12% for refunds, and this applies on or after the effective date of the tax.
Okay. There was one other discussion that we had in testimony about this part on Section 1 about the change from 5 years to 3 years.
Yeah.
It looked like, is that, where is that addressed?
Yeah, so everything, all sections 1 through 7 of the A and Gross bill have been deleted.
Gotcha.
Okay, so then this is really the bill, is your Dash A10 amendment.
All right.
And so you still have the 5 years for both personal and real property.
Essentially what this does then is it does not eliminate the lawful taxes assessed on Ms. Atterbury's house, but it does say that she can remain in the house, that her house is not subject to foreclosure, and that the taxes become a lien on the property payable once the property is sold.
And, Mr. Chairman, I understand that the deferred taxes are not charged interest.
No interest, correct. Okay. Well, the chair moves adoption of the Dash 10, A10 amendments to Senate Bill 125. Any more discussion? Any objections?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rasmussen.
I prefer the original solution for Ms. Atterbury, but I will be supporting these amendments.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any other discussion? Any objection? The Dash A10s are adopted. Mr. Chair. Representative Shetterman.
I move Senate Bill 125 as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Representative Shetterman moves Senate Bill 125 as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative Safari.
Aye.
Representative Markson.
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Representative Shetterman.
Aye.
Representative Welch.
Aye.
Representative Wick.
Aye.
Representative
Williams?
Yes.
Vice Chair
Rasmussen?
Aye.
Chair
Strobeck?
Aye. Senate Bill 125 as amended will go to the floor with a due recommendation. Representative Rasmussen will carry the bill. I want to thank all members for their constructive suggestions on this bill. I think we've come up with, you know, a better long-term solution on this process. Work session closed. Senate Bill 125. Thank you. And we'll reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2947. And I'd like to ask Lynn Frank to come forward.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Lynn Frank. We have a small business that does the energy conservation loan audits for the Oregon Office of Energy State Home Oil Weatherization Program. In this legislation today, you're considering repealing the tax credit that enables lenders like U.S. Bank, KeyBank, and others to make lower interest loans to those who live in oil-heated homes around the state. I just wanted to come before you today on behalf of all of those we all serve that cannot to tell you that that is a program that has been of great benefit to folks. These people live in homes that by definition are typically older, homes that are not well weatherized, and the energy conservation loans has made a real big difference in terms of being able to help them replace older, inefficient furnaces that are costing them a lot of money and helping make their homes more energy efficient. And it makes sense to spend money on things that we use, but not on things we don't use, such as energy going through the walls and the ceiling and out the windows. This has made a real difference to people throughout the state. and it's something we would urge you to continue.
Okay, thank you. So you're speaking about the Energy Conservation Lenders Credit?
That's one.
Okay. All right, thank you. Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Okay, Whit.
I noticed that this credit has less than a $50,000 impact. Do you know how many loans this credit was applicable to in the last biennium, for example?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Whit, I do not, but I'm sure the Oregon Office of Energy could address that. I can tell you, because I talk to the customers personally, they're calling in the families and asking for help, but for those it does help, it makes all the difference in the world.
Looks like it's in a decline of $100,000 in the previous biennium, estimated to be less than $50,000 in 99-01.
We're reaching more people around the state, but those that are coming in today really have no other alternatives, and so they are looking for help.
Okay, thank you. Representative Welsh?
I believe this will be a greater consequence, I think, here, even after this session. We are in a health water environment, considering several pieces of legislation around the oil tanks, underground oil tanks, heating oil tanks specifically, and larger populated areas. We know that right now it looks like our figures show that there's 50% of them that are leaking, and it's becoming a groundwater issue. I think that we want to come up with a process that would allow these homeowners to remove those tanks or at least repair them. I believe that a lot of them in this process, Mr. Chair, are going to consider changing to alternative forms of heating. And I believe that this will be used more in the future. And I can't support the other energy alternative that have really addressed the issues in this state, as we've seen them used here, and we had testimony earlier. And I think this falls well within something that will be used in the future if it is not showing presently or has in the past.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Sylvie Horn.
Thank you, Chair Strobeck. And to the committee, I'm here to talk about the child care business credit. And I have the unique, maybe not unique, but the pleasure of talking on both behalf of the employer and as a working parent. I work for Pell.
Excuse me, could you just identify yourself for the record, please?
Excuse me?
Could you just
identify? Sylvie Horn.
Oh, and you're from?
Portland.
Okay, thank you.
All right. My first time. And I am the human resources manager for Powell's Books in Portland, and also a working parent. And we're here to encourage you to continue the child care tax credit. As a representative of Powell's, I'm able to tell you firsthand how valuable those credits are for our employees and for the company. It enables us to tap a workforce that would normally be unavailable to work because the expense of child care is prohibitive, especially when people are starting in retail jobs. Once they get into a workplace with the help of child care credits, they have real incentives to continue working. We have lots of other benefits they get to tap into at that time: health insurance, education benefits, and many other state and federally mandated benefits as well. They also get opportunities into career development and skills enhancement, so it's a real step into the workplace and a step up. It also helps as a working parent to be able to personally choose the child care provider that works best for you, that you have the most confidence in, and get that kind of reimbursement without strings attached to the kind of place you use, or even, as many employers do, just provide a list of providers in the area. This is real help. It's financial help. It's emotional help. And as the employer, it's labor force help. It gets us folks that we just would not be able to reach because they could not afford to be working. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Horn. I don't see any questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Craig, Ray Craig, are you from out of the area also? Okay. Would it be possible for you to return then? Is there anyone else who's come from out of town to be here today to speak on this bill? We do have a 10 o'clock floor session, and so we are out of time and you have to adjourn the committee. Okay. Thank you very much. We'll get back to this issue another time. Thank you all for coming. Committee's adjourned.